about the lack of accountability that is currently in the system, and some of them have control over quite a bit of discretion and money. And so the bill that you have before you is one that's requested by the county commission, and I think you'll find your testimony very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Shannon, members of the committee, my name is Linda Swearns, and I am the chair of the Deschutes County Commission. And I'm here to talk to you about the passage of Senate Bill 1124. Deschutes County has, and I'm just going to bring this up to you, 20 special road districts. Now, I'm not sure if we have the majority of the road districts in the state, but we've got a lot, and they have provided some real interesting challenges. And I'll go ahead and leave this here, let you take a look at it at your convenience.
Okay.
They have provided some challenges for our county commission. First of all, this bill would require special road district board members to be elected by their constituents. Now, currently, special road district board members are appointed by the county commission. Now, this sounds good in theory. However, there's a real problem with this, because what happens is these road districts either get together informally or formally, and they take a vote amongst themselves, whoever shows up at the meeting, and they submit a name to the county commission to hold the office for a term of 4 years. Now, there are three board members for each road district. Right. We have, I believe, a couple that may exceed that. But here's the problem. They will submit the name to the county commission. We, on two occasions, have said we would like you to pick another representative for your road district. We had one instance where we had a board member lie, mislead, and take out an illegal loan on behalf of the road district. The three county commissioners, myself and two others, said, we will not name this individual to your governing board. Well, my two commissioners left office. Two new commissioners came on board. We met with the county attorney, who informed us that the only role the county commission plays in these governing boards is that we appoint them. We do not have an opportunity to challenge who they presented. We don't have the authority to recall or remove for cause. In fact, we have no role in that at all. We have to take whoever they present. Well, being a person who was not going to put my name to an individual who had lied, misled, and taken out an illegal loan, my two new commissioners said, Linda, these people do not have to take an oath of office. They don't have to comply with state budget law, nor are they accountable through the election process. We have no choice. I said to the two commissioners, go ahead and appoint the individual. However, my name will not go on the dotted line. So we have a real problem in that these folks are not directly accountable to their constituents. This truly is taxation without representation. Now, if I tell you a couple of war stories, I want you to know that I do support special road districts. If they were here on anything else, I would be here testifying as to their importance in a county and into a local area, because they do provide a very valuable service. In fact, we have set money aside within our budget this year to provide some training for these individuals. However, we believe that these taxing districts should be held to the same standard as other elected bodies. And here's what happens in real life. I've been in office now a little over 2 years. I will have road district citizens call up and say, I've met with my road district board. I've asked to look at their books. They refuse to show them to me. They are hiring their mother, their brother, and their sister. They are not going out for RFPs, and they've taken out illegal loans. Now, having dealt with several road districts, I'm not talking about a majority, but I'm talking about several, I have verified that all these things occur. You should see the look of disgust on the citizen's face when I say, these people have not taken an oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States or any law. They do not have to comply with the open meetings law. They don't have to comply with budget law. All I can do as a county commissioner
is to approve their appointment. There is no recourse under current state law to remove or recall an individual who has taxing authority. Now, let me put this in perspective. We have one district who charges $4 per thousand. That's over double what the county charges per thousand. We have property owners who are paying $400 to $3,000 a year to road districts. Now, you tell me what those citizens will say when they find out there isn't any accountability in, on behalf of these parties. So what do these individuals do? Because they have no recourse, they come back to the county commission, they hire an attorney, and they say, if they're not accountable and they're not going to do the right thing, I want to be withdrawn from the district. So, lo and behold, a county commission has to deal with all the boundary changes. Now, according to state law, you have to prove a couple things. First of all, you have to keep the district contiguous if you withdraw these properties. You also have to show that you're not going to adversely affect this district. If they've made a financial commitment based on your value, then you have to pay your fair share. Well, as you might expect, taxing districts don't like to lose revenue. They don't want to allow anybody to leave their district. We have we've had two cases in the past year where property owners were on a county road and were responsible for paying a road district fee and received absolutely zero benefit for being in the district. When they approached the district and said, I'm on a county road, the county pays for my snow plowing, the county maintains my road, you don't provide anything. The district hired an attorney and spent $5,000 fighting the particular withdrawal. Now, the interesting thing was is the withdrawal would have only cost them $3,000, but they've got to protect this little empire. The other thing that bothers myself and other county commissioners and citizens is the fact that these budgets exceed, in some cases, $100,000. Now, you tell me why it's right to have individuals appointed by their neighbors to run a $100,000 budget. They don't have to comply with state budget law. These are not elected officials. They don't have open meetings. They don't present their books. They hire their neighbor to run the snow plows, and then they don't want to deal directly with the citizens, and they tell them it's too bad. I'm sorry. I know we have some districts in Deschutes County that don't have any budgets. However, I think it's important that they still have elected individuals. Now, we have heard from some districts within Deschutes County who oppose this bill, and they oppose it for two reasons. The first reason is they don't want to spend $50 to $100 every 2 years to put these people on the ballot. Now, I'm sorry. This is truly taxation without representation. $50, $100 goes a long way. I'll tell you what, if your name is on the ballot and someone votes for you, they have greater credibility within your eyes, and I'll tell you, they're going to work to try to resolve their problems. But they don't have a lot of credibility in these informal neighborhood meetings, pitching up a name to the county commission, and when the commission has a problem with them, nothing can be done. I certainly believe that it is in the best interest of citizens and the expenditure of public funds. Remember, these are taxing districts and they have public funds to at least make these folks go through the election process. And then when a citizen calls me up and says, I got a problem with the way money's being handled and how the district is being handled, I can say, you know what, you can run for office. You know what? If what they're doing is so wrong, and in some cases, I got to tell you, they're breaking the law, they can recall those individuals. I think that an oath of office, regardless of how small the district is and regardless of how small the budget is, sends a message to citizens around our county and around the state that this is the right thing to do.
Thank you, Commissioner Swearingen.
Swearingen.
Let's move to the side. We'll have Hasina come up. Go ahead, Senator Harris.
You have the, by existing statute, you have the power to create. You have the power also to abolish.
In some cases, I certainly would like to abolish some of these districts, but...
No, I mean, is it statutorily there to abolish, or would it take the vote of the people in the special district, or what?
That would be a question for an attorney. I would think that you would have to go through a legal mechanism to dissolve a district. I don't believe a county commission can dissolve a district.
Well, the reason I'm asking, there's other special districts in the state. We have the only sanitary district in the state, and they're not elected. They're appointed by the county commissioners. And I'm concerned about if you start with this, does it impact them negatively? Because they're classified under the statute as a special district, which I assume road districts are classified under special districts. And so my concern is, maybe a problem in Deschutes, but we don't have a problem in our county. We don't want to change.
Well, Senator Hannon, if an individual or a governing body has the ability to tax a citizen, I think they have the right to have representation, and it should be through an election process. And I'll be the first to say it's always the few that ruin it for the many. But I got to tell you, what's wrong with an election?
There's such a thing sometimes as too much democracy. if we created road districts, you know how long the statute has been in existence for road districts?
Oh, a long, long time.
And you got one problem.
No, we have
Deschutes
several.
County. Okay, but the problem seems to be Deschutes County.
We would offer an amendment that would make this a choice of a county commission. In fact, we have actually proposed that in an amended form that would give the county the ability through an ordinance to either appoint or elect.
Have you seen the draft?
I have.
Okay, well, will you speak to them?
Sure.
You have something to add.
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering, what says that you have to appoint these people? I mean, if the appointment is up to the commissioners, you don't have to make the appointment then, right? You could wait until the appropriate person is brought before you and then say, okay, we'll appoint that person to. So you do have the ability to scrutinize at that point and decide who you want to appoint or not. Is that how it works?
Well, we have had that exact situation, and what's happened is these folks get real creative. We've had two positions on a three-member board, and it said, okay, we won't, if you're not going to approve these individuals, we'll just let it sit. And here we have a taxing district. My God, we've collected taxes, and nobody wants to take charge, and they're going to hold a county commission hostage to put in folks who are not willing to comply with state law. And in some cases, there's no state law to require them to comply with.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Maybe I can shed some light on some of the issues. Not all road districts are bad, and I understand Commissioner Swearingen's concerns over some of the road districts in Deschutes County, and she's provided me with some examples of some potential mismanagement of some of those road districts. The statute that Senator Hannon was asking about the special district statute is really found in ORS 198, but this piece of legislation only amends ORS 371055, and that's the statute that deals only with road districts. So your question regarding the sanitary district that exists in Klamath County would not apply
okay.
in this situation. This only deals with road districts. That statute states for the formation of a special road district that they can be formed for the purpose of improving county or city roads. And I'm well aware that this committee understands the problems in this state with transportation and roads, infrastructure for roads. Many of these districts are formed because the county or the city is not providing adequate service or a level of maintenance for the roads. Districts are formed, particularly where Commissioner Swearingen is from, in Deschutes County, for snow removal purposes. People can't even get into their homes because the snow does not get removed. It builds up in Bend, and they can't get into their homes or their driveway, so they form a special road district. In one particular instance, you know, they could form a special road district to provide for snow removal. Other reasons special road districts are formed are for roads that are unpaved, for grading the gravel that is on those roads. So it's really the citizens of that particular area that want to form a special district. I would also add, too, that when a special district is formed, a special road district is formed, the county has to sign off on the formation of that district. And so all of these, there are 121 special road districts in the state, according to the Department of Revenue. The county has to sign off on the formation of that district. That's been a long-standing policy. Any formation of a special district commission, the county commission has the ultimate authority to say, no, we will not form the special district. So these districts were all formed with the permission of Deschutes County and other counties. In order to provide you with some information about road districts and the amount of taxing authority that they have, I've provided you with a handout of all the road districts that exist in the state according to the Department of Revenue and the total amount of taxing authority that they extended in 1997 or 1998. Some of those districts, if you'll look on, the ones that are in bold are currently members of Special Districts Association. They exist in 15 different of the 36 counties. Some of the road districts, if you'll look at Clackamas, none of those are levying property taxes. And you might wonder, why do they exist? How do they get their funding? Believe it or not, some of these districts actually go door-to-door and ask for contributions, $10 contributions to the road district or $50 contributions to the road district. Some of them receive grants, federal grant money, I believe. And some choose to pay during the assessment process, and some choose to not. I guess I would like to say, with respect to the amendments that Deschutes County has provided you with, that we do not oppose the election of board members for the accountability. I think our main issue with the amendment is that this would create two problems, potentially create two different scenarios. It would not create a standardized process throughout the state, where if a county decided, like Deschutes County, according to the amendment, that they wanted to adopt an ordinance providing that road districts will have to hold elections for their board members, they could do that. You could go down to Senator Hannon's area, and that wouldn't be the case. So there would be sort of a mishmash of what could occur and what couldn't occur. Also, I understand that some of the problems with some of the districts in Deschutes County, they would like to hold elections. Some of the other districts do not want to hold elections simply because of the cost. So there's nothing in the amendment that provides for the district to determine whether or not at the local level it's appropriate to hold that election. Still, again, I would like to reiterate, we don't oppose the election provision, we just oppose the cost. And I think the cost could be debated depending on what county you're situated in and how many members you have in that road district. So some of the road districts, like this particular printout, if you look on page 4, the Urban Road Maintenance District in Washington County, that's a local improvement district. So I believe that they're already responsible to follow local budget law, and they probably have quite a large piece of territory that they're taxing in, and that would be probably a fairly costly, expensive election.
Christina,
if
we could amend it, but that if the county commissioners decided that this is what they wanted to do, because the way I read the law, it's all vested in them anyway. They're the ones that appoint that. If they decide we want this off our plate, but it's going to cost us the price of the election, but it's worth it. And just so you know up front, if the county commissioners make this decision, it's not going to cost the road district for the election. How could you oppose that?
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, we would not oppose that. If the cost was funded by the county, we would certainly not oppose that. But we would like it, we would prefer that if that were to be the case, that rather than have each county determine whether or not they chose to require road districts to hold elections, that it just be standardized throughout the state. But in doing that, I think some consideration, regardless of who pays for the election, needs to be, the issue needs to be raised over these road districts that are not taxing. They have no tax, they're not levying any property taxes. They are purely funded through assessments. Many of these guys, because sometimes, and I will submit to the committee, sometimes there are sort of good old boy network, little small road districts. It's a small road in a county. They want their road graded, and so they form a district, and they go through, they don't levy property taxes. They just go door to door and collect some sort of assessment. Many of those are very small. They're neighbors. It's a small subdivision.
Christina, what is it to you, and what is it to us, if it's local control? Well, if I moved to Albany, if I moved to Ashland, and I said, oh, look, we get to elect our road district, we get to do that in Deschutes County, well, what? I mean, people do things different in different parts of the state. What is the problem with that? What, with you being representing the special districts, how is that a problem with you?
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, I wouldn't say it's a huge problem for the county to make that determination. I just think for the sake of standardization around 15 different counties, that it would probably be to the benefit of some of these small districts that have no, they don't have any staff, they don't have the technical knowledge, that if it was one standardized process, it would probably make it much more simple for us to notify, or for Department of Revenue or whoever would be notifying these districts that you will now comply with elections provisions in the
ORS. The power isn't in them. The power is in the county commissioners.
Sure.
They're the ones that are going to fund it. They're the ones that decide maybe we have some rigs we got here that need to be elected, or this works in our county. We don't, I just don't, because the address will still be the same special district. That's where you'll mail the notices, whether they're appointed or elected. I really and truly don't see the big problem. I don't see why it has to be standardized like the curriculum or something.
I understand, members of the committee. I'm not implying that it has to be standardized. It's really not a make or break deal for me. It would be preferable if that's not the way the committee chooses to go. I can certainly live with that. Really, our main issue is the cost of the election, and
indeed,
it's an unfunded mandate with specific ballot measures.
And if the county commissioners don't want to pay it, then they just keep the status quo.
Not
and if they say if it's worth it to get this monkey off our back, we'll pay the $100, $150, then I just don't see a problem. Would you both accept those kind of amendments?
I certainly would agree to go ahead and fund the election. However, I don't think it's right. I would go ahead and do it.
This is a compromise.
I mean, this is a compromise for us because we personally feel when you get a $100,000 budget, not all of them do, that my goodness, they can afford $50 or $100 every 2 years. This is a very small fee. And if we were able to have this bill passed, we would agree to pay it. But, by the same token, I still think taxing districts should have to fund it.
But couldn't the county commissioners assess them for something to retrieve your money?
You know what? Like I said, I can tell you just based on our legal bills and the time that I spend with these few offending districts that it would be worth us every 2 years paying for it. In fact, maybe what we'll do is we'll just reduce the amount of money we set aside to provide for training for these individuals after we have this up and running. Because really, I think once we do this, I don't think we're going to have the same problems. I think people, take yourselves for example, I take an elected position a whole lot more seriously than a committee I've been assigned to. And I think these people would do the exact same thing.
Okay. So we'll, what, is that, does anyone have a problem if you do a compromise amendment there?
I do.
You do. Okay.
I like to ask you exactly what it is.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Now what part of the LC draft don't you like, Christina?
I like, Senator Shannon, members of the committee, I like what is not there, the funding. I dislike what is not there. The portion of everything in this LC draft is absolutely acceptable to myself and the Special Districts Association, except for it leaves out the part where it says the election cost shall be paid for by the county.
Okay, and then it would be acceptable to you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
Okay. Yeah, how about you, Senator Yee?
I didn't hear the first part of the discussion.
Well, she has these rogue districts, county commissioner from Deschutes County, and they are not accountable to anybody except the three elected commissioners. And some of them have done some pretty wild things.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would like to have a way so that they are accountable to the voters who they tap.
So what about the cost of election that Hasina is concerned with?
She wants the county to pay for the election if they're going to let them go out on their own instead of the special mm-hmm. districts pay for the election.
Oh, is county government amenable to paying for the election?
They don't have to do it.
They don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. And it really is a minor expense. You've got 20 districts. Every 2 years, you're going to have to put the bill. It's not that big of a deal. Like I mentioned before, I don't think it's fair. However, based on our time and money involved, it would be worth it.
Okay. Well, I think, do you have any closing?
Senator Shannon, members of the committee.
Well, I think we'll just bring it back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Or you could get it amended in the House, Christina, and I would help you.
And we would, I would agree to help.
To get it, I would not concur if it wasn't in there, you know, when it comes back that your amendment would have to go in there.
Oh, and I'm sure. Would Hasina rather have the amendment before it goes to the floor?
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, I think if the legislative intent is there on the Senate side, I think it would be, if you're under a deadline where I understand you need to move the bill out before, and if you're not meeting on Thursday or Friday, I think the sections of legislation that you'd want to amend is 255, 305, that deals with election expenses.
If the county chooses, then they have to pay for an election.
I'm comfortable with the discussion that's occurred here that we can fix that in the outside.
Okay. Because I will go get Senator Dukes. Will you support it if it's amended?
I don't like that, but I'll do it.
Okay.
I think it's a worthwhile thing.
What do you think, Susan?
And
Senator Castillo.
I'm sort of lukewarm to this whole thing, but since it's optional and the counties can decide whether they want to do this or not, I think that's really important. So,
because I would go down, Senator Early and Senator Dukes are downstairs, and they said that they would need it.
I'm just wondering how this process will work. You've got 20 in Deschutes County. You have 20 districts, you said?
That's correct.
And the election is every 2 years?
Every 2 years, you would elect one or two, because it would be a total of three on the commission. So in the off year, you'd have one, two every other 2 years. And I think that's extremely fair. Mm-hmm. Remember, board is a good working board.
Senator Shannon, Senator Castillo, that is current practice for all special districts that hold election. They do it in staggered terms.
Okay, then. Thanks. We'll just
thank you very much.
Senator Castillo, do you want to vote yes or do you want to vote?
Sure, I'll vote.
Okay. And you can reserve the right to vote on the floor.
Okay.
Just save us from okay. Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 608. Oh, wait, yeah, right, we're 1124. We'll open our work session on Senate Bill 1124.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the dash, whatever that is, known as LC.
Oh, we can't. Oh, that's right.
What is that?
It says draft all over it. I'll just have to get permission from the Senate President to hear it next week. And then we'll get amended just the way you want it, Christina. Okay, thanks. Okay, we're just going to...
Madam Chair, then I would withdraw the motion.
Thank you. Okay.
It's too late to do it tomorrow?
Well, we haven't given 24-hour notice.
Oh.
Okay. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1124. Okay, thanks. All right. Now, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill. Is there any signed up for 608? Okay. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 608.
Okay. You want to talk about it?
Senate Bill 608 is the appropriating money to the highway fund to cover bridge restoration and maintenance program, mm-hmm. and that is the vehicle carrying bridges. And there was discussion of some amendments, but those were unable to.
Elsie said they could not do that. And so they said 608 has to stand as it was originally drafted.
Okay. Not be amended.
Right, because
could not.
Yeah.
One is the constitutional problem.
It does have a subsequent weight in it.
Madam Chair, I'm informed that State Highway Department has $150,000. They work on the vehicle carrying cover bridges, and a bill is not needed. But if we want to repair and maintain the non-vehicle carrying cover bridges, then we need a bill to do that. Can this bill be used to fund the non-vehicle carrying bridges?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. It says relating to financial administration of program for covered bridges. And that program they're talking about is highway funds. Right?
Right.
Okay. So then,
so we cannot say lottery funds?
No, that was
not amended to say lottery funds?
That was 609, it has not been heard.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you have to post it.
Have you seen where that $150,000 goes?
No, I haven't seen it, but informed that Highway Department is...
You want to come up and explain it? If I were you, I'd look to see which bridges were fixed how much.
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, good evening. I'm Doug Tindall, the maintenance engineer from the Department of Transportation. Senator, I don't have a list of where the money went. It went to... there are no covered bridges on the state highway system, so we have... done this by parceling the money out to the county roads and city streets that have covered bridges on them, and I can get you a list of the ones that we've done this past biennium. As I was explaining to Senator Yee, it turns out we're spending about $150,000 on covered bridges, vehicle carrying covered bridges anyway, because we need to keep them maintained so they can continue to carry vehicles.
Well,
do we need this bill?
Well, we probably don't need this bill.
Well, listen, can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
So, what ensures that you will spend that money, the 150? What do we have assurance it's going to be more than 150? You have an average of, since Senator Yee's bill ended, and it's been up to you to make the decision, has it been 150 every year?
Senator Shannon, Senator George, it was 150,000 in the biennium. The first biennium is the first biennium that we haven't had the bill, and we just thought it was prudent to continue an expenditure level of about that much to keep the covered bridges in shape.
Do we have a guarantee from ODOT that that will continue?
Senator Shannon, Senator George, we don't have a specific line item in the budget, but our plan would be to continue to maintain covered bridges at about that level in the next biennium.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Would it be possible, since I'm the chairman of the Transportation Committee and Ways and Means, just to give you a line item without having this bill?
Senator Shannon, Senator Hannon, you probably give us a budget note without the bill.
We can take care of it down Ways and Means.
Okay. Thanks. And we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 608.
Yes. Doug, can you give us a list of bridges you are maintaining now, the vehicle carrying covered bridges?
Senator Shannon, Senator Yee, I can give you a list of, I'll give you all the covered bridges and highlight the ones that are vehicle carrying. It's about, I think there's 49, and about 9 or 10 of those are not vehicle carrying, but I can provide you that list. So I'll provide it to all of the committee.
You want to see how much was spent last by in your model?
Yes, and the names of the bridges.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay, that closed that hearing. The work session. The work session, Senate Bill 608. All right.
And, Madam Chair, we're going to do a a bill for the non-vehicle carrying cover bridges, are we?
We hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we'll get a little permission from the Senate President.
Yes.
So we haven't heard the bill.
And Senator George has a bill.
Right. The bill has not been heard. Right.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
I'm going to go see what we can do. Okay. You might have a committee at 1 o'clock on Friday and you hear it. Okay. Get it in this week. Okay. Let's see. The Senate bill. 1108.
Right.
Senate Bill 1108. This
will be a work session. Senate Bill 1108 is the farm to market road issue, and there was a minute drawn out to decide what the farm to market road would be.
Okay. Yes.
Is that definition consistent with the definitions that existed in the past? Because I know that we're part of the definition.
The only question I would raise is, I suggested rural or urban road, street, or highway that is used primarily to move agriculture. If you just say rural, it makes the rural roads eligible, not the urban roads where they take the farm to market. And I think it should include both definitions. That's what I suggested when we asked for the amendment.
Okay, then, and did you pass out the amendments to the Bingham?
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Then, why don't we can add one word.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would move the Senate Bill 1108-2 amendment dated 42399 to Senate Bill 1108.
Is there any objection? Discussion? Without objection. First, yes. Yeah.
And now, Madam Chair, I would move on subsection 2 so that it would read, as used in this section, a farm-to-market road is a rural and insert or urban road, street, or highway that is used primarily to move agriculture or logging products to market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what if it was, is a rural road, comma, urban road, comma?
That's fine, too.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think grammatically you can do that. Because rural road, you'd have a whole bunch of commas there. I think it has to say rural or urban.
Okay.
Doesn't it?
Doesn't matter.
Are you an English professor?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay, Senator Hannon has moved to amend the -1-2 to say line 3 after rural or urban. Is there any discussion? Objection?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1108 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, what is the purpose of this bill? Is this to define what farm-to-market roads are? Is this a definition?
Well, it's really to make it a higher priority with the Department of Transportation, I think, and local government.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's considering the importance. You'll see in your packet I have a letter from a woman in Washington County that said how their farm-to-market road is not being kept up and the dust is causing havoc among the crops. And so don't you think that's what the purpose of the bill is?
Mm-hmm.
To prioritize farm-to-market roads in the whole scheme of things? Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Senator Yee?
Aye.
Chair Sheehan?
Aye. Having received unanimous votes, it passes, and I'll ask Senator Dukes to carry the bill. Okay, next one. Oh, we didn't. Okay. I'll close a work session on Senate Bill 1108. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1058. Okay.
Good answer, and members of the committee, following our last meeting on this bill, it was determined that an amendment should be drafted that would change it to 4 years. That's the only change in the amendment, for 8 years.
And the DEQ said they were moving in that direction, or the EPA, or whoever, but the EPA is moving that way. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair,
yes.
In addition to that, we moved from my committee yesterday the reduced sulfur bill. All of these things will converge sometime in the future and will make this very much possible to extend this testing period because you will be operating very clean cars.
Because the sulfur and fuel.
Right, and the idea of this is that as the new technology cars come on board, get into the market. And to me, there needs to be a little incentive to get people to think about this so that I can avoid that DEQ testing. In fact, I'm driving a newer vehicle. That has a positive thing because the cars are now self-adjusting, and they're coming with their own onboard computer systems. And so we're at a good time when it comes to the environment as far as being able to have the cars become a very friendly part of our environment.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes,
Madam Chair, I want to know how do people know that they need to comply with pollution control equipment standards?
Except on your vehicle registration. When your vehicle registration expires, you have to go and have your automobile examined. If you pass, they issue the tags for the license plate. Right there. So it's every 2 years, 4 years, whenever you renew your registration.
Mm-hmm. Now, have we extended our registration period 4 to 8 years, or was that for driver's license?
4 years for driver's license is 2 years for vehicles.
Mm-hmm. So
you'd have to change the registration to 4 years to make it work if this is at a 4-year increment, because DMV and DEQ have a contract for DEQ inspectors or agents for DMV.
Oh, so they get notified.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get a registration form in the mail,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a slip that says you're in a non-attainment air quality area and you have to report for inspection.
Mm-hmm. So when we change it from 8 years to 4 years, they get notified.
Sure.
The ones that's older than 4 years, they won't have to do it anymore.
No.
Oh, the ones older than 4 years will have to do it.
They'll have to do it, right.
And less than 4 years,
yeah, the brand new ones won't have to,
okay.
Because they meet the standards.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair,
yeah.
I think the 4 years would be fine because this is only applying to new vehicles.
Okay.
And if you look at it, you can go through one registration cycle before you actually have to have your car examined. And
two registration cycles.
Well,
mm-hmm.
No, it's really one complete one that you have in between before you, on the third registration, you'd have to go for an I&M inspection.
Okay. Do
you want
to move it?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1058-1, amendments dated 4/27/99, on page 1 of the printed bill, line 17, delete 8, and insert 4.
Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I was wondering if we do have the representative from the DEQ here on this program.
Oh, sure.
We could get his reaction to the amendment to 4 years. Are you okay with this bill, or do you still think that it's going to have an impact on pollution levels?
Yes, come please.
He suggested it, didn't he?
No. To 8-4, to the 8.
Yes, he suggested
it. For the record, my name is Greg Lee. I'm the Air Quality Administrator for DEQ. Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, the EPA has issued a draft report, as I said, that indicates that you probably don't get the pollution reduction benefit from inspecting cars until they're 4 years old. Right now, we do it at 2 years. That is a draft report. Process of evaluating the technical aspects of it. We won't complete that until about June or July, but I do expect that's going to be the result of the outcome.
I didn't understand that. So what do you mean by that you don't get the full benefit?
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, the way the program works is it forces a person to keep their car maintained so that the pollution control equipment works properly. What we're finding out is that pollution control equipment actually works better and longer than we thought it had in the past. And so since it's not deteriorating as fast as we thought it would, there's really no benefit to inspecting those cars.
Before 4 years, is what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's right.
Madam Chair.
It just costs the car when kind of you just out the money because they almost 100% pass. Yes, Senator.
Just before the first of this year, someone announced, and Greg, you and I have talked about it, that something like 98% or something like that, it was more than, it was in the, more than the mid-90s, of the cars 8 years old or younger, in other words, had met and passed the standards. And so the idea was this was a very reasonable approach to this thing. And Greg, have you ever seen that? Because we tried to find out if you had a copy of it. We contacted AAA. But it does come in once you drop under 8 years that they do. It's an overwhelming number. What did EPA suggest on 4 years? What percentage passed?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I've never seen that report. I can look for it for you, but I just don't have the data on cars 8 years and older.
But on the 4 years?
EPA has a
draft on it.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that's true. And the main reason that's in existence is just because it's been such a popular issue. It came up so much that they did do a study on it.
And will you remember what percentage passed?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I think on cars 4 years and younger, it's somewhere around 95.5%. It's less than 1% of the cars actually fail. Now, what the technical data had shown in the past is that on those cars that did fail, when that pollution control equipment went bad, it really went bad, and they really emitted a lot of pollution. Since then, with the newer generation cars coming out and the better equipment that they're putting on there, it looks like that's just not as valid as it was before in the past.
So be careful. Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. Yes, I'd like to ask a question. If you go to 4 years, I buy a new car today, and then I would wait 4 years before I had to go in for vehicle emission testing. The question I have is, what is the fiscal impact upon your agency? Because your agency is budgeted, predicated upon the fees that you collect. And so are you going to be coming back hat in hand to the legislature and saying you extended this 2 more years, and now we're short for all these funds, and can you fill the void in?
Madam Chair, Senator Hannon, I guess I should make clear, first of all, that until EPA issues the final report, our preference would be to withhold judgment on whether we actually extended it to 4 years or not. Senator Hannon, you make an excellent point that we had chosen not to bring up in front of the commission because the perception is always out there that we run the program in order to have an excuse to collect the fee. You're absolutely right. That's going to remove several thousand cars from the program, and when you remove several thousand cars from the program, then we short ourselves that $21 for each of those cars that we would have collected if we had, in fact, tested those cars. So it will create a budget shortfall in the program. We discussed how we might handle that, and a couple of the options that we came up with is right now we don't test, we don't charge for the inspection until the car actually passed the test. It can go through the test 25 times, and we won't charge for that car until the 25th time when it passed the test. Maybe one of the options that we'll have to look at in the future is to give one free retest. That's what most states do. They allow you to come in. If you flunk it, you get one free retest. If you flunk it again, then you pay for every test after that. But there will be a budget shortfall that we're going to have to figure out how to deal with.
If you don't have so many cars, maybe you wouldn't have to replace people if they retire.
Madam Chair, that's true. Right now, the way we've structured the program is that we base the number of FTEs that we have on the program on the amount of service that we want to provide. And so we've kind of decided that we don't want our customers to have to wait any more than 15 minutes when they come in and get a car inspected. And so that's the way we determine how much FTE that we're going to need. Cars that are in that time frame are a relatively small amount of cars, so there's not a direct correlation in the money we're going to lose versus the FTE that we would have to give up. We still have to keep most of those FTE on board.
Senator? Thank you, Madam Chair. And so you said that you would rather that we waited until EPA came out with its recommendations before we should, instead of going ahead and changing this now, you'd rather see what EPA wants to recommend and then comply with their recommendations?
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, that's correct. And if they did come out with that recommendation, then we could accomplish the same thing through a rulemaking process.
And Madam Chair, if I could ask one more question. I noticed in your testimony that you provided to us last time, you said that this would require rewriting the Metropolitan Maintenance Plan, gaining EPA approval. So if this bill passes, would the EPA have to approve this change then or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, yes, they would have to approve this change. And under the old bill, when an expensive car is up to 8 years old or older, there was about $10,000 per day of pollution loss that we would have had to account for. Under this scenario, we will have to account for a small amount, but it's nowhere near this tonnage. It's somewhere around 1 or 2,000 tons a day. So we think that we can account through that through other means. That we could convince the EPA to do without having to reach out and touch somebody else.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, yes. 2,000 cars cannot produce 2,000 tons a day. That's impossible. Do you have any explanation for that? You said it might be affecting a couple thousand cars. Then all of a sudden we got 1,000 tons per day of pollution.
Madam Chair, Senator George, I can get you a good number, but 2,000 cars can produce a significant amount of pollution. Right now, this program accounts for the program as a whole inspecting 490,000 cars per biennium in the Portland airshed alone accounts for 13 tons of pollution per day that's removed from the atmosphere, 26,000 tons per day. And that's a lot of pollution that you get from inspecting those cars. Now, I could get you a specific number on what 2,000 cars would equate to, but that is a significant tonnage.
Madam Chair, $21 per inspection, that's only $42,000 impact on the budget. $42,000.
Madam Chair, before you hold me to those numbers, I can get you good numbers. I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head.
Right.
There is a budget impact.
Right. Okay.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I think I hear you saying is this the way it's going. Anyway, if we can do it by rulemaking, you can pass the law, but that's where we're headed.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
That's right. Okay.
All right. Is there a motion? Yes. Okay, then I'll go down and get here. Are you going to vote yes? Okay, I'll vote yes. Yeah, go get Karen. I don't know where Senator Dukes is. Okay.
Let's go through the ways of me.
No, I don't think so. Let me look at the bill. Did it say on the chart for the referral? No.
Because he doesn't need that many people anymore. He doesn't need that many FTE anymore when he has less cars to inspect.
Oh, that's what I figured, that maybe he's going to make shorter lines.
Mm-hmm. Or does this also depend on EPA's approval? So can we pass a bill without EPA's approval?
No. They will tell EPA this is what we want to do, and EPA will say that's where we're headed anyway, or they will say you can't.
Then why do we want to pass a bill if they might say you can't?
Because they might say you can, and they'll say what FTE say.
That's
what the
terminal thing is, save money and
the cost of
the bill. Where are you going, Senator George?
Right back on that.
Right. Okay. What?
If we send money, we should send it to the Ways and Means.
We don't go to Ways and Means if it costs more money.
Yeah, the saved money we can use FTE. Ask him how many FTE has grown a year.
He said none. Cliff, is that your name? Do you want to come back? Is your first name Cliff?
Greg,
excuse me. Okay. Senator Yee was wondering, if this passes, do you expect to reduce FTE?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we've done a fiscal impact. I would like to bring the fiscal impact back to you, if I could.
Mm-hmm. And when can you bring it to us?
I'm sure. I can bring it to you tomorrow, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You want to do it tomorrow?
I can't.
Oh, because you need to post it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do we have an emergency posting, they waive the posting time?
No, we're not there yet. We're still going to have to hours.
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we still have to have 24 hours.
Yeah, we still have to have 24 hours.
Oh, I see.
But since you're on the Ways and Means down in transportation,
mm-hmm.
can't you bring this up down there? And do you see push it or the budget?
Well, we have to have the bill, don't we?
No, you...
Well, this affects DEQ's budget. I'm not on DEQ's budget.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I might add that one of the policy packages that we are asking for in our budget is to convert some contract positions that we now have to permanent state positions. I would be more than happy to bring this information to Senator Yee, and then as we discuss this through the Ways and Means process, that would be a perfect time for you to provide some information if you'd like to do that.
So what about the bill that wants to privatize the testing? Didn't you have a bill to privatize?
Oh, we did, but there was a lot of opposition to it. I doubt they had the votes to go.
Oh, really?
Don't you remember? Didn't look good. They were nervous about that.
Mm-hmm.
We were just going to allow the owner, the car owners to do it.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good deal.
I know it's a good deal, but I don't think they have a vote. Okay. All right. Okay, Senator George, we're in work session.
Okay.
Senator George moves that we...
Dash ones?
Yeah.
I'm sure I move dash ones to Senate Bill 1058. Known as LC3920-1, dated 427.
Is there discussion?
Then, yeah. Madam Chair, if the fiscal impact comes in to show there might be reduction in FTE, so does that mean the bill will be referred to Ways and Means?
Senator Hammond, it's my experience that it's only when it's an increase it goes to Ways
and Means. No, it's Senator Farrelly's committee on Natural Resource. He has the DEQ budget.
There we go.
And I think you need to ask him that question.
If there is any reduction, we'll spend the money somewhere else, Senator George. If there's an increase required, we'd be obviously required to reprioritize in our budget process. So
this would be a same.
The faster we get this bill out, the better we are.
Okay.
Well, my question is, does this go to a Ways and Means instead of going to the floor if there's a fiscal impact?
If there's a fiscal impact and it's considered to be a significant fiscal impact, which would be $50,000 or more, it would come to a full Ways and Means committee for a referral to a subcommittee.
Okay, this is about
$42,000. $42,000. If it's $12.50, then there would be no significant fiscal impact and it could move directly to the floor.
That's
right. Yes, but if it happens to be more than $50,000, then it goes to Ways and Means.
Correct.
And
a savings?
If the savings is
Oh, no, I beg your pardon, ma'am. I thought we were only referring to a negative debt.
No, it's a savings.
Ma'am, I've never been confronted with a
savings.
No one ever asked me to
welcome to term limits.
Ways and means that's going to be a savings.
Right. I think you can go to the floor. If we'll ask the president to intercede if it's supposed to go there. Okay. There's no objections to the amendment. It would pass.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just move Senate Bill 1058 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
No.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Hammond?
No.
Senator Yee?
Aye.
Senator Hammond?
Aye. The bill passes, and is there a carrier?
I will carry it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Senator George will carry it. This closes the work session on Senate Bill 1058. Just a second, Mr. Ferrioli, before you go back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
That will rest easy.
Okay. Then we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 908. And Senator Heath, would you chair this for a moment? I have to make a quick call.
Okay, Senate Bill 908, Macon, do you want to go over the bill?
You should find in your packet the dash for amendment, Senate Bill 908, and the dash for amendment defines what the gas station is, and it requires the gas station to post a sign, just an 8.5 by 11 sign, one sign, paper sign, provided by ODOT that would have the federal tax listed, the state tax listed, and then total vote amount sum bottom, and also would provide like a post office box where people who have questions could contact the Department of Transportation regarding these taxes and how they're being used.
Yeah. Okay. You all have the amendment in your packet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Madam Chair, I remember we sent this to Ways and Means because it had a $674,000 plus fiscal here, and now with this amendment, I'm wondering what the fiscal is. Are these signs going to be provided by ODOT?
Yes, it's one sign.
One sign?
Yes, and there will be no cost.
I could request the fiscal and the fiscal opposite. Wasn't able to get it prepared for today's meeting.
Well, it's going to cost something, isn't it? I mean, you don't.
Somebody's got to pay for
it. Right. I just anticipate that being minimal compared to the previous fiscal.
Okay.
This is a work session, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair, I have prepared a sample of. The poster that gas stations they can prepare on their computer based on Transportation Department's information that Oregon tax is 24 cents, federal tax 18.4 cents, and total tax 42.4 cents. And in the bottom is a PO box number that people can contact ODOT if they have any questions. So there should be no fiscal impact. But ODOT will have to give the initial information. how much tax and the PO box number and the size of the poster.
Are there counties that tax or cities that have a gas tax? Mm-hmm.
Oh, we don't have city gas tax, do we?
Oh, yes, there is. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Four cities. How many counties? Two.
Oh,
what is, I'm sure we're in a work session.
Yeah, we're in a work session.
How many stations are we talking about here?
All of them.
Well, I know, I'm so bad. ODOT must know that number.
Can somebody come and tell us how many service stations?
Madam Chairman, it's in the fiscal impact statement. There are 1,847 licensed gas stations throughout the state.
So we're looking at probably around $300. If I produce a poster, $500, I mail it to you.
In California, every service station has to have a 3x5
card, a sign on each gas pump with that information. And so all your bill says is just one posted.
Yeah, one posted.
Madam Chair, so how are we going to resolve, if you want if people to know all the taxes they're paying, how do you resolve the city and county taxes or the local taxes? There are how many different ones?
There's two counties have a gas tax and four cities.
And four cities.
Question, Madam Chair, I'm going to sound like...
Yes, go ahead.
The term municipal encompasses both county and city.
Oh, it does.
So you could say simply a conceptual amendment that would add federal, state, and municipal taxes. And then you'd have the information that you need to disclose fully the federal, state, and local taxes.
Will local do it instead of municipal?
Local works as well.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask a question what we're trying to achieve? I looked at this the other day and I'm somewhat felt frustrated by the high price of gas. And I guess I've cooled my jet since that time, but if this has a fiscal impact of 600 and something thousand, that's money that could be better spent on the highways because the people...
6 minutes, Senator, that's out. That was with ODOT, that was original. That's gone.
That's gone?
Oh, that's gone.
Oh, what did you adopt with them?
Mm-hmm. Oh, but we're not... She has them. Senator, we have them in. Where are yours? The dash four.
Dash four.
Now, do the dash four encompass the dash one where we took out percentages?
We did not adopt dash one.
Okay. The dash four doesn't include amounts. It will show the amount. Okay, so we don't have to do dash one. Okay.
No.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. And Madam Chairman, the dash four amendments would have a fiscal impact that's negligible?
Negligible.
There's no fiscal impact. ODOT, do you want to...
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, sorry for the confusion. I'm Joan Plank with the Department of Transportation. I understood, actually, I didn't understand what amendments were going to be proposed today. We were working on a fiscal. I was told last night that the version with the one sign mm-hmm. was around $200,000, down from $600,000 in the original bill. Not knowing what amendments were being proposed, legislative fiscal didn't send us amendments, and so the fiscal did not get filed.
Right. We're not even doing that one big sign. She wants just an 8.5 by 11 sheet.
Okay.
So
the potential is there for a fiscal even at that. But
so there will be a sign like this. But ODOT needs to give out the initial information about how much federal, state, and local taxes and give them a P.O. box number that people can contact in case there are questions.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, without seeing the amendments, it's not real clear to me what the responsibility is for the Department of Transportation and so mm-hmm. and how we would achieve that. We did have some discussions about the possibility of doing some providing the information, say, over the web page, the ODOT web page, and getting the information out to people in that fashion.
Mm-hmm. In change.
Okay.
To dash four.
Okay.
Do you have a copy of dash four that we can give to Joan?
Madam Chair.
Madam Castillo.
It seems to me that we're having ODOT pay for the signage when it seems there should be a shared... if you want to do this, because they're not responsible for the federal taxes that are imposed on gasoline, and they're certainly not responsible for the local taxes that are imposed on gasoline, and yet we're asking ODOT to pick up the tab on the fines. And, you know,
all they do is send out information like a sheet, like this, and tell them how much is Oregon tax, how much is federal tax, and how much is state tax.
And local tax.
So I think the most it costs would be the postage to how many stations?
1,847, ma'am.
1,847 letters, the postage. Session B very much.
Madam Chair, if that's what the bill requires, it's not clear to me from reading the amendment. It says that that we will prepare a sign that's 8.5 by 11 inches. If the sign is a piece of paper, it probably isn't going to be terribly expensive. If you want that piece of paper posted on a gas pump, it's probably not going to last very long. So it's unclear to me just exactly how this gets carried out. We would be happy to go back and do some analysis to figure out what it would cost, or we'd be happy to work with the Ways and Means Committee to further refine the numbers if the committee wants to send the bill to Ways and Means.
We don't want to send it to Ways and Means. It has to be $50,000, and I can't
imagine. And I'm just unable to tell you without having an opportunity to do the analysis what the fiscal would be. As of last night, it was $200,000 on what we thought the amendments were going to be.
Sure.
We have a new amendment.
Joan, would you just sit close? And Tom Gallagher, would you come up and...
we already have the question.
These are the people that represent the service stations, and they have something. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Gallagher, and I represent ARCO, gas cleaning here. We do this in California. We were unable to figure out why we do it in California. We can't find the statute or the rule or whatever it is, but we do post at the pump a sign listing exactly the information that some of you want. And Mike and I have been discussing this, and I think we would come forward and volunteer to say, if you pass a law that says to the gas stations, would you please post the taxes on the pumps, we would make up our, we would go get some decals and some signs, order some decals and signs and put them on the pump. Part of the complication is using, as we talked to you last time, Senator, a piece of paper that's posted inside the building, it's a lot of wear and tear. So it's not one sign. It's always getting torn down and moved around. We just as soon have a stick-on decal that goes on the island that tells people how much they were paying in gas taxes. Now, I don't know what your timing is, but if that was for, if the statute passed saying the gas station shall post this without anybody notifying us, and the dealers association will put it in their newsletter, or and we will notify our stations, and we will make up sticking signs that will go up on the pump, and it should be zero fiscal.
Sounds good to me, Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I just wondered if you'd be willing to accept a conceptual amendment to the Dash 4.
If it doesn't get too complicated.
Madam Chair, there would simply be two words that I would change.
Okay.
In Section 2.
I have to find the Dash 4. Everybody have the Dash 4? Okay.
In Section 2 on Line 6, in consideration of what the committee's just heard testified, instead of a sign, it would simply be a decal visible to customers. And then
a decal?
Yes.
In a manner that makes the decal
visible to customers.
Okay.
And then, Madam Chairman, in line...
Wait, just a moment. A sign is twice in that line. So twice.
And then on line 11,
yeah.
Line D, or Section D, change the word sign to decal.
Okay, Tom, can you come back?
What about the size?
What, you said 3x5, didn't you?
Well, Madam Chair, Tom Gallagher, there's limited space.
That's right.
And you have all the federal stickers and all the sign stickers and so forth. And this is the same about the size. It's what they use in California. 3x5 is called.
Let's just put 3 inches by 5 inches, Senator Ferrioli.
And that would be my change. And then
on line 7.
On line 7. Then one other change.
Okay.
On line 14.
3 inches by 5.
The Department of Transportation shall furnish the information described in Section 2. So the department would be providing the information, and that would go to the... station owners, they would know that they're posting the correct
detail. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Couldn't we also appropriate a little over $3,000 for each gas station so that they might provide these, and we would still come in less than the fiscal was to have ODOT do it?
But they say zero fiscal impact.
The Department of Transportation shall furnish the decal described in set. No, shall furnish the information. The information?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Are we at a line to say local taxes?
Just a minute. So finish that information. Okay, we're there.
On line 10, the total amount of federal, state, and local.
Okay. Is that the words you said, Ted?
Yes, ma'am.
That says municipal.
Local's better.
Local's better, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, we know on a 3,000 per station.
Madam Chair, I have a question about that. If fiscal impact is zero, why would we want to give the station $3,000?
I know, but I'm looking at the original, and it was $674,856.
There's a
lobbyist who said, we'll take it. Well, I don't think you should pay him to put the decal up. So.
Well, I think it's just an interesting thing to look at the
decal. It's a very interesting thing. Okay, now here, I'll read it as amended, the amendment, okay, Senator Ferrioli. Line, Senator Ferrioli moves that, first we have to adopt the dashboard, okay.
Actually, Madam Chairman, let me propose a conceptual amendment to dashboard. Conceptual amendment would be...
Wait, one second. Senator Hannon, a while ago we adopted the dash and then amended it. Is that the proper way?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We adopted the dashboard.
I corrected that, I'm sure.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli moves the dash 4 amendment. Is there any discussion? Without objection.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would propose a conceptual amendment to the dash 4 amendment.
Okay.
In section 2, line 6, where the words appear a sign, I would propose a decal.
Okay.
Again, appearing in on line 11, in the section 2D, the word sign is replaced by the word decal.
Okay.
And then on line 10, section 2C, add the words and local to the line, the total amount of federal, state, and local taxes per gallon. And then on line 14, section 3, replace the word one sign described with the words the information described in subsection.
And then the five.
And line 7.
And thank you, Madam Chairman. And line 7, I believe the specification was 3x5.
Yes, 3 inches by 5 inches.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
That may not be such a good idea to describe that because these pumps vary in their shape. You know, we talked about this bill earlier. I mean, way earlier when I was looking at doing the same thing that Senator Yee has done. That may be something you'd want to leave to them, leave to the discretion.
Okay, just have a decal that contains the following information. Okay, is that all right?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, a decal.
Well, they said California has 3x5 inch decal. So why don't we...
Tom, Mike, would you help us on this? Should we say 3x5 or should we just... What do we do here? Well, it says approximately 3x5.
Madam Chair, Tom Gallagher, usually this sort of detail doesn't go in the statute.
It's
stuff that's done by rule. Uh-huh. I think the point here is that you want people to see how much the taxes are.
Right.
Now, we don't have any problem with how many people see how much the taxes are, especially with the gasoline prices as they change and so forth. Mm-hmm. The percentage drove us crazy because of that changing all the time.
Right.
But what we'll do is we'll post a sign that people can read. Otherwise, it doesn't do any good. But if we make our own, and post it on the island, on the post in the center or wherever it is, people can read it. It could be 8.5 by 11, and a person's enthusiastic could be 35 feet.
Madam Chair,
American flag.
What is going to happen with subsection D, if I can ask the Senator from John Day? You deleted sign and made a decal. It says at the bottom of the sign of post office box number for the Department of Transportation, which people may direct inquiries about the taxes.
Madam Chairman, to the good Senator from Ashland, the conceptual amendment included changing the word sign in line 11 to decal, so the decal would contain the post office box information.
Okay.
how fine is the fine print, and what is the cost of, well, you're talking about a 3x5 card, and you want the numbers as big as possible, and then you put this Dear John number on there to call ODOT and complain about your taxes.
Do not look a gift sign in the print.
Senator, Madam Chairman, to the Senator from Ashland, I would not specify the type, size, or the visibility, but leave that to the Gasoline Dealers Association to work out, just so it's readable. That's the specifications he adopted by rules.
Well, what's wrong with, Madam Chair, the way it is? Leave it with the TEL and 3x5. But my question is, does the committee want to give them an address so people can contact them if they have questions?
People would like a toll-free number.
Yeah, but then they can charge us. That'll be a possible impact.
Okay, it doesn't matter to me whether, I would just assume ODOT's address wasn't on there for my bill, but that wouldn't be important to me.
And sir, I agree, because I think what you're doing is causing ODOT to start getting all these inquiries, and then instead of paving the road out here, we're going to have some office people answering telephone inquiries about the gas tax.
Actually, they should have their local legislator's phone number. ODOT
should have sent her need phone number on.
I don't know how to answer so many questions.
Do you mind if you take that off, Senator?
I don't mind.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I'll amend my conceptual amendment to delete section 3. Oh, I beg your pardon, to delete section
2B.
Sub B. Now, we have one more slight problem, and we can go. And that is, if you notice on line C, it says the total of line A and B. So we really do need a line C that says the amount of the price per gallon that is local tax.
We want federal, state, and local, right?
Mm-hmm. So we need to have a line that's C and then change C to D.
Madam Chairman, I'll amend my conceptual amendment to add line C,
mm-hmm.
the amount of price per gallon that is local tax.
Okay.
And then a line D, this is the total amount of federal, state, and local taxes per gallon.
There we go. Okay. And I think that's it. Okay.
And D will be the total.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any discussion on his amendment without objection?
Yes.
We got them. I got every one of them.
We have one.
I know that. Wait. Okay. We have one decal in the whole place.
That's enough.
Providing they'll go to pump 24.
I was just going to suggest that they may want to hold off on those decals till we pass the new gas tax package.
Oh, I think they can go right across the
city. Yep.
Madam Chairman, perhaps I could further amend my conceptual amendment.
Yes. Okay.
A decal for each pump.
There we go. Where is that?
That would be in line 6.
On line 6, that makes a decal
for each pump
visible to customers. Okay.
Well, is this what the gas station?
Yeah, they don't care. The decal.
That is so cheap.
In a manner that makes the decal on each pump visible to customers, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On
see if they have a response.
They don't. They don't care.
I'm just asking.
You care, Mike, if it's on each pump.
If we have to pay for it, I think we'd prefer not have it on each pump.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to pay for it, gasoline dealers, I'm only speaking for here, I think we'd rather see the bigger one posted in one place.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to pay for those, then, you know, we'd prefer not to pay for them. So I'd rather go back to the one bigger one posted in a conspicuous place than having to maintain putting them on each pump.
Okay, we'll read that last minute there, Ted.
Do you believe that it should be a decal or a sign?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care which way it is. It should be something that's going to hold up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Tom's deal is. If we just put a piece of paper up with some thumbtacks that's going to look tacky, and I think that's what he was trying to get around.
Mm-hmm. Now we're back to every pump. Here comes Tom.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think we've had it here. Is you want us to post so people can see what the gasoline taxes are when they buy gas.
Mm-hmm.
And the more detail you get into, the more people fall on and fall off. Because the issue here is so you're able to go out and look and see what the taxes are. Mm-hmm. And that, well, we have no objection to that. Some people may post it in the station. Some people may post it on the pump. Some people may post it. You're leaving it up to the gasoline station to get the information out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you do that and you come back next session, Senator, and you went into a gas station and you didn't know what the taxes were, then you'll know how to fix it.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. We have – okay, we're not going to adopt that last conceptual. Okay. Ted?
I withdraw my motion, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Okay. Everything else has been brought in for this, isn't it?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to try again.
There we go.
I'd like to propose an amendment to the dashboard, a conceptual amendment to the dashboard. It states very simply in Section 2, the owner or operator of the gas station shall post in a manner visible to customers information, the following information, the amount price per gallon of the, and then the bill proceeds from there to include Section A and B, and the only other change would be the amount of the price per gallon of local tax. And then in Section 3, the information would be furnished by the Department of Transportation. So essentially what I'm saying with this amendment, Madam Chairman, that on line 6, we delete the word "that makes the sign," and then after the comma, delete all references to the sign that goes on to line 7 and stop with the deletion will stop with the following information. So that line reads now, the owner or operator of a gas station shall post in a manner visible to customers the following information, colon.
So just, I thought it was the owner or operator shall post in a manner.
Visible to customers.
Mm-hmm. In a manner. Shall post in a manner
visible.
Okay, so that's not finer detail.
The following information.
The following. Okay, got it.
Colon. Uh-huh. And then, okay. Then there would be no change, but in on line 10, you would insert C, the amount of the price per gallon that is local tax.
Uh-huh.
And then you would add a D, the total amount of federal, state, and local taxes per gallon.
So delete. Right.
Delete the section sub D entirely.
Right.
And then in Section 3, delete one sign described and replace that deletion with the information.
Okay.
Now, Madam Chair, under D, do we put give them a total?
There's a new D.
There's a new D, Madam Chairman. This is the total amount of federal, state, and taxes per federal, state, and local taxes per gallon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, is there any discussion on his amendment, his conceptual amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, without objection, it is adopted. It becomes the new bill. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I would like to move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The conceptually amended Senate Bill 908 containing the dashboard amendments is conceptually amended.
Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, the understanding is it's a 3x5 Sakel.
No, ma'am, the understanding is that it's a posting visible to customers.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a decal, could be a big sign, could be a little sign, but visible to customers.
Okay.
And they know, well, if it isn't what you wanted, he says, you come back and change it next time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you get on his case.
Right. If it's not done right.
Okay. Right. Okay. Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Castillo. Aye.
Senator
Lilly?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator
Yee?
Aye.
Senator
Shannon? Aye. The bill, having received unanimous votes, goes to the floor with a detailed recommendation. Mm-hmm. Senator Yee will carry this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Right, sir? Right, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Madam Chairman?
We close the work session on Senate Bill 908.
Madam Chairman, the record should show that we saved the taxpayer $674,000.
Right. Yes. Very good. Good.
And we also made sausage.
And trash
of the worst kind.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, right. Now, just a second, Ted. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I am called to my other committee for a vote.
You are?
I am.
Will you come back?
I will.
Okay, because we have one more bill we want
to vote. Madam Chairman, I'll come back as soon as I'm voted.
Okay, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1121. And what I'd like to do is move this bill to rules.
Okay, what bill is this?
It's about the Department of Transportation.
Oh, 1121?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason for moving it to rules?
So it won't die, necessarily, or in some other form. It has a great relating clause. Somebody doesn't have to burn a priority bill. So it's relating to transportation. They may need something. We may.
Why don't you tap here and leave it here?
I could. It's here already.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's here. And leave it here in case you want to hear again.
Okay, but rules is open till Friday die. And I close in 2 weeks.
But if you hear it today.
I've already heard it once.
Oh, you can hear it in the future then.
Okay. What? It's here. I close. Okay. Okay, should we leave it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It belongs here. I mean, it's a transportation issue.
Oh, I know, but rules takes everything. Okay. We will close. If we need to open up later and hear it, then you go with me, Mr. Senate President.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill, the work session on Senate Bill 1121. All right. Now, Senate Bill 1282. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1282. You want to explain to this and the amendments?
Senate Bill 1282, you'll find a dash one amendment in your packet.
Okay.
These were the conceptual amendments discussed in the last hearing. And basically, it talks about contracting agencies, the public contracting agency, and that specifies it to ODOT versus any other agency. This would only relate to the Department of Transportation.
Basically, that's what it did,
wasn't it? That was where the issue was.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Is there somebody from the construction industry here representing this bill?
There was the other night, Senator, but I...
Okay, because as I looked at the major explanation, it deals more, it appears to me, with subcontractors who are applying to ODOT for reimbursement. This bill, the amendment says the contractor. My question is this a problem with subcontractors receiving payments, or is this an issue of contractors receiving payment? Did somebody from ODOT maybe explain this? What's the difference?
Chair Shannon, Senator Hannon, when we let Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer with the Department of Transportation, when we let a construction contract, we establish a contract only with the prime contractor.
And the problem is with the subcontractor not being paid by the primary contractor. Is that correct?
Chair Shannon, Senator Hannon, I believe the discussion was around it's around a disagreement on payment to a subcontractor, which comes through the prime contractor, but it's the amount that ODOT paid the prime. The prime contractor has paid the sub everything that ODOT paid the prime. In the case that was cited the other night.
Madam Chair, can I ask some other questions?
Yes, I only have my community administrator because he spent the time with these contractors.
Okay. The language in the amendment, -1 amendment, is a additional compensation on public improvements contract arises between a contractor and the Department of Transportation. A prevailing contractor shall receive cost and reasonable attorney's fees. My question is, what if it's the subcontractor that brings the action? Are they excluded from fees?
Chair Shannon, Senator Hannon, all actions are brought through the prime contractor. That's the only person that ODOT has, that's the only firm that ODOT has a contract with. We don't have separate, they're not subcontractors to ODOT, they're subcontractors to the prime contractor.
And what is the, is dispute resolution or mediation or other services intervening rather than going to litigation?
Yeah, Senator Hannon, there's a, in specification, a claim review process that we agreed to with the Associated General Contractors. It's a structured process that elevates, does everything it can to resolve the claim at the lowest level, and if it can't be resolved there, it has a prescriptive method to elevate the claim, trying to avoid litigation.
Under existing statute, what happens when the contractor prevails? He's laid out the money, hired the attorneys, gone through the appellate process, it's been ruled in his or her favor. Is there any compensation for legal expenses in going through that exercise?
No, there isn't. There's an interest payment, but there's no compensation for legal expenses. Similarly, if ODOT prevails, there's no compensation for ODOT's legal expenses either from the contractor.
Okay.
It's a little different, though.
Well, I, Chair Shannon, I spoke with the people who introduced her, or were part of at least getting this bill introduced. And they indicated that, I said, my single biggest problem with the bill was that a contractor could file a $100,000 claim, and according to the way the bill's worded, even, I haven't seen the -1 amendments, but if it only changed public contracting to ODOT, all the contractor would have to be awarded is $1 out of that $100,000, and we'd have to pay the $1 plus all of the attorney fees. Well, what that means is contractors, in my mind, contractors could then, not that they would, but they could file frivolous claims hoping just to get $1 out of it because they've got no risk. They get their attorney fees back. That would be my issue with this. You know, they told me that they were interested only in the proportional share of the attorney's fees. In other words, if they only got 50% of their claim, they only got 50% of their attorney's fees paid. And I suggested that if contractors file claims that indeed are found to have no substantiation, it costs us a lot of money too. We have to pay the Attorney General. ODOT pays the Attorney General. So,
yeah, but it doesn't come out of your profit. It comes out of their bottom line. But I would like to know, though, I've been asking this and seeking it. I would like to know, what are your attorney fees to the Attorney General? Because you invite people often to sue us if you don't like the decision on whether it's access, whether it's making a payment. This contractor, he won. But he had to sue you. He had to take you to court to get his money. And I would like to know, not just in contracting, but what are your total AG, what's your bill to the Attorney General's office last biennium?
I'm sure Hannah, we can get that.
On all issues.
All issues.
Yeah. Because I know myself that people that have come to me, I could account for about $500,000. So I'd like to know what all yours are. Yeah.
In-house staff also who might be working in preparation for that suit. also, what would happen to a contractor who brought a frivolous lawsuit against ODOT? What's the chances they'd ever get a contract again?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, there's no provision in contracting law to stop that contractor from getting contracted. It's still low bid. There's no points that count against them for bringing in frivolous lawsuit or any kind of lawsuit.
Well, Madam Chair, I know one contractor that said that it made life so miserable for him they just quit bidding. So there must be, that may be the only provision. Maybe we should come up with a more fair process.
All right. Well, I think what we need to do is have that contractor back. Then I'll wait till Ted comes back up and we'll move the bill.
Madam Chair, so was that the, thank you. So was that your only objection? I mean, significant one, but was that your only concern with the bill? Was just the concern about the possibility of frivolous lawsuits?
Chair Shannon, Senator Castillo, yeah, that was that's our main concern. Most claims get, I mean, this is not really a prevalent thing that happens. Most claims, if they're well-documented claims, they get resolved real quickly. If the contractor comes in with a well-documented, substantiated claim that says, I want money for doing this, we can review it quickly and resolve it. And that's the way most claims get resolved. In fact, on the testimony that you heard the other night, this regarded the I-5 trunnion replacement project. There were 36 items claimed subsequent to completion of the job. 31 of those regarded the traffic control contractor that you heard from the other night. All but two of those have been resolved. There are two outstanding issues, and it is a disagreement on what the contract wording is. We read it one way, the contractor reads it another way. And we have not been able to reach resolution on that, on those two issues.
Madam Chair? I'll say a quick one. But when you took it to the judge, didn't the judge read it their way?
Senator Shannon, that case is still pending. It has not been, the one that you heard about the other night is not resolved yet.
Didn't they win one with you, though?
Senator Shannon, I don't know if that company has ever won a claim. I don't believe that company's ever gone to court to a lawsuit level. What they said was that some of the claims, we paid some of the claims, and we did. I said they had 31, there were two left. Some of them, they've been resolved. Some of them with no payment, some of them with payment. That were legitimate, substantiated claims.
Senator,
what is the rate of claims filed on contracts? What percentage of all the contracts that ODOT gets involved with? How you know many times are their complaints filed for, you know, whatever money? I guess usually it's money, right? Over what money is due the contractor?
Senator Shannon, Senator Castillo, it's normally over additional work added to a contract or beyond what was actually specified in the contract. As far as a percentage rate, we get, I would guess, and I'm only guessing, we do around 200 contracts a year, and I would guess that maybe 10 to 15% of those we have claims on. And the majority of those are resolved real quickly because they're a substantiated claim. There are a few that last longer.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you. Does when you resolve the case, do you award them attorney fees?
Chair Shannon, Senator Yee, no, there's no provision in law. If they are successful in their claim, we do not give them any attorney fees. And similarly, if they are not successful in their claim, they don't give us any attorney fees.
Mm-hmm. I believe this is why the bill is needed, because people have to hire lawyers in order to get paid. So that's why I feel attorney fees should be awarded. But I have another question.
Go ahead.
The requester of the bill is not going to be benefited from this legislation. Today, because
the bill only starts paying after it becomes effective. So it will be sometime 3 months after session ends. So the requester of the bill is not going to be benefited from this legislation.
Many other people will.
Many other people
Many
will.
Other people will.
But and not him.
It will give them an incentive to settle earlier.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And many of the people that examine ODOT, you were saying that some people look it over. That's one of their problems is that people look it over, but they don't have the authority to make the decision. And it all moves up. That's what this, another contractor was telling us. You can't get decisions right away. Okay, we're in a work session, and I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1282. Is there any discussion? Yes.
I guess not on the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, without objection. And I move Senate Bill 1282 to the floor with a due pass.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a statement. I have a concern about the awarding of the cost and the attorney fees, and you know, I just heard what Senator Yee said about that she feels that, you know, people should be compensated, but at the same time, it seems like, you know, it should go both ways because ODOT then has to hire the attorney, someone from the Attorney General's office, and we're talking about then taxpayer money. If this award for the cost of attorney fees, we're not talking about, you know, one of the ODOT employees having to take money out of his pocket. We're talking about taxpayer money that's being paid to these people. And so if you want to use taxpayer money to go out and do this, you know, I think that I just want to be clear on what it is we're talking about here. It's not just money that comes out of some hole in ODOT's budget. It's taxpayer money that's making these awards and these attorney fees, and that's my concern about how this is written. And I just don't know that taxpayers want us to, you know, use their money that way. So I'm very concerned about the wording in this.
Well, I think this is a tool to encourage both sides to get reasonable and get, you know, on with solving the problem at hand instead of, evidently, you haven't heard the stories I have where they have the deep pockets and they don't mind being sued, Senator, and I just think that this helps them stay with the business at hand.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
No one seemed to be concerned when we spent $300,000 to Stafford Exit for attorney fees to destroy those people's property.
$350,000. Where is that line, Senator Castillo, that you were talking about?
That this award, the cost and attorney fees to contractors who prevail in dispute. Isn't that what this bill does?
Right. But I was just looking for that line. See if it's
in the summary.
Oh.
Isn't it?
But that's what the effect of this bill is? Yeah. What it does?
I was seeing if it could be easily amended to. But see, England has loser pay. That's how they keep their things out of the law. They don't really sue unless they really very, very sure they're going to win.
But you're not having a loser who loses to ODOT pay. You're just having, when ODOT loses, that it pays.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're saying the taxpayers have to pay when they lose in a case, but when it comes the other way and somebody's coming after, you know, the transportation system of the state, then it doesn't go the opposite direction.
The only thing is, rarely do they sue because they know that it will limit their future work with ODOT, and it's a big risk.
Madam Chair, the other issue is that you're in a court of law, and if you can't substantiate your claims, you're not going to win in that court.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
On page 2, section sub 10, line 35.
Okay.
Notwithstanding subs 8 and 9 of this section, when the public contracting agency is involved in a dispute with the Department of Transportation, Cost, and Regional Energy, attorney fees shall be available to the prevailing contractor only if the resolution of the dispute occurs beyond the region manager review level of the claims process. So I would think this bill, in addition to making the award of attorney fees and costs available, also provides an incentive to resolve disputes at a lower level, at least the region manager level or below.
I'm glad you brought that up because they asked us to amend that region to project.
Mm-hmm. Only if the resolution of the dispute occurs beyond the project manager review level of the claims process.
Actually, Madam Chairman, I think the project manager who's locked in a dispute with a contractor may be less objective than a region manager. So I would rather see it kicked up to a review level at the region and then resolved at that level.
Okay.
That's usually what happens when you get a problem. You want a semi-objective third party to look at it, at least.
It just takes time to go up through this.
But they have 21 days according to the statute. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Is there any more discussion? I move it to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, Senate Bill 1282. No discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
Is that you?
No.
Senator Gurley.
Aye.
Senator Gurley.
Aye.
Senator Hammond.
No.
Senator Yee.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the majority vote, it goes to the floor, and I'll carry it. Thank you. Okay, and if there's any further business coming before our committee?
Maybe within our time limit. You said you'd only keep us 2 hours.
Oh, wasn't that great? Thanks, you guys, for being here. So we are adjourned.